there's been one demand, and that's holding up that Lombardi trophy, period. That's all I care about, is holding that trophy up and holding that trophy up here.
The prime thing is you have to win. You have to win. Otherwise, you can't be a success in professional football.
You're listening to The State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, and Ted Nguyen on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Snap good, hold good, and Raiders in, Chargers out, Steelers in.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network, post-game edition. This episode is presented by BetMGM, the exclusive betting partner of The Athletic. Sign up at BetMGM.com using the promo code THEATHLETICPOD. I am Jimmy Durkin, joined, as always, by Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, Ted Nguyen. The Raiders are going to the playoffs. 35-32 victory over the Chargers in overtime. The wild situation actually happened where there was a potential for a tie to get both teams in. The Raiders don't want no part of a tie. They don't want to send the Chargers to the playoffs. They don't want to send themselves to Kansas City, a team that's outscored them 89-23 on the season. They wanted to take care of business, and they did. Daniel Carlson's 47-yard field goal wins it as time expires in overtime. For the first time since 2016, for the first time with Derek Carr available to play, they are heading to the playoffs. I mean, just a wild end to this season. I mean, week 18 in the NFL was probably one of the craziest days we've ever seen in the NFL. Just with the amount of games that mattered that went to overtime, you looked at, I mean, the Raiders had a chance to clinch that playoff spot in the morning if the Steelers had lost in OT. Just a wild day. And for the Raiders, a rewarding finish as they win 4 in a row to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think, you know, I believe it was Jim Trotter that asked Bisaccia, you know, we all kind of thought after that loss to the Chiefs on the road, just the way that they looked, that they were probably, you know, done for. I mean, they'd have to win 4 straight against some teams in the playoff contention. And although they had been a feisty team throughout the year and competitive in most of their games, I think we maybe got too tied up in the Chiefs' losses. Because, like, those were really the only two games this season where they just got flat out, you know, embarrassed. Like, the team, you know, they were saying all the right things, but we all kind of like, you know, they say this every year. It's different. You know, they're going to finish stronger. They're closer now. There's nobody skipping practices and whatever was going on in the past. But I don't think any of us really saw this coming, especially the nature in which, I mean, they basically had 4 straight games come down to the wire and pulled them all out. And for a team that they're, you know, kind of Achilles heel has been finishing season, finding ways to blow those close games. I mean, we saw it even last year, the year before. For them to make the playoffs in this fashion, it wasn't like they beat up on some weak opponents or blew teams out or kind of got the luck of the draw. I mean, they beat 4 pretty good teams and did it in walk-off fashion in 3 of the games. And, you know, they earned this one. And, you know, they got a playoff berth, obviously, and it's about, you know, what happens next. You know, they have a game to go win now, but it's kind of, I feel like, considering everything that's happened this season and where the team was just, you know, a month ago, you know, it was worth them sitting back and celebrating it last night.
I think it shows their confidence. Their confidence really, I think, built up over these close wins. I think Hunter Renfrow said that once you win these close games, you kind of know you can do it and you kind of expect to do it. So I think it's been ugly at times. I think last night they blew a 15-point lead in typical, you know, historically Raider fashion. But this team is a very tight-knit team. I definitely believe in each other. Definitely believe in both, you know, the offensive players and also the defensive players. Now, that D-line definitely has a real big identity in the locker room. It's kind of a tough bunch of kind of people rally around. So just, it was a great win. The crowd was incredible. That was definitely the best crowd I've seen in Vegas in terms of the energy and just the ratio was good. I'm mostly Raider fans, but really loud. I think the players fed off that. And it was just a great night. It was just an exciting night. And I never would have thought they would have won 4 games in a row to get here. But now that they're here, you know, it's kind of like they say, it's a whole new season. They got a good matchup. I mean, of all the teams you in the AFC, that's probably the one you want to play, I would think. So it's a good matchup. And again, the confidence is through the roof. So congrats to Raider fans and to all the players.
I think this type of win kind of shows how this Raider team has really gelled late in the season. It's a stark difference with how the Chargers are playing and how the Raiders are playing. Like, the Chargers are totally dependent on Justin Herbert. Like, if Justin Herbert wasn't on that team, they'd probably be picking at a top 10. If you look at how bad their offensive line is, how inconsistent their weapons have been with dropping passes, and how bad their defense is. I mean, Justin Herbert was just amazing last night. you know, especially when you hit that 5 minute mark, when he had faced that 3rd and 21, he threw what should have been a touchdown pass to Mike Williams. Then he converts to 4th and 21, and then he just goes, you know, crazy from there. It's one of the most amazing stretches of quarterback play I've ever seen, honestly, converting all those 3rd down and 4th down. And that touchdown pass on that swirl route was just like at a crazy tight window. But I mean, that's the difference. I think the Raiders just played really well as a team overall. They used everybody on their roster, and you know, including Marcus Mariota and that Mariota pack, which was big too. Defense came up with stops when they needed to at times, and you know, they were able to pressure Herbert, and Carr was able to use a lot of his weapons. You know, I was surprised to see Bryan Edwards leading the team in receiving yards at the end of the game, and Daniel Carlson was huge again. So it was just a really great overall team effort by the Raiders to win this game.
At the end of the game, it was kind of looking like one of those typical like Raider finishes where they just find a way to blow it. I mean, obviously Justin Herbert was making some great plays on those 3rd and 4th down throws. It was also just like, what are y'all doing in coverage sometimes? It kind of starts to look like the defense last year, you know, kind of down the stretch when they blew some of those games, like the Dolphins games and moments like that. It just kind of seemed like, especially, you know, once they send it to overtime, it's like, all right, here we go. Like they're going to, you know, find a way to blow it. But, you know, even though the Chargers did get a field goal in overtime, you know, they did bow up and held them and prevented them from getting that touchdown that would have won the game. And, you know, I think that, you know, the defense, it started off well, then they had their rough finish, but then they recovered at the end. And I don't think we saw that resiliency really from that unit, or really, I guess you could say the team as a whole last year, but particularly the defense. I think for them to, you know, face, you know, Justin Herbert putting on one of the better quarterback displays we've seen this season and be able to recover in the same game and help the team get the win, I think that speaks to the overall resiliency of the team.
I think it also kind of cemented Josh Jacobs as really being like a foundation piece. You know, we've talked about him in the past. We've kind of debated about the fifth-year option, and you know, he's not been durable. But the way he kind of took over in overtime, I think he had 69 yards rushing in overtime, and just kind of he had that aura about him he had a few weeks back, where you see like kind of he said, "He, you know, I'm the closer, give me the ball," and that's the way he ran the ball. He made some great runs, and I think in that, you know, on that the last 3rd and 4 run, he gained 10 yards and set up the field goal. But if he doesn't get that, I mean, it is probably a tie, which is hilarious because, you know, I was so against all the tie talk. And then when they go up 15, I think Adam Schefter tweeted out, well, there goes all the tie scenarios.
When they went up 12, that's when everyone thought that the tie wouldn't factor in.
Well, Schefter pretty much said that the Steelers are in the playoffs now because there won't be a tie. And so I thought, when I saw that, I was like, oof. That's a pretty bad freaking jinx. But yeah, it was a crazy night. And just so much happened. I mean, people forget about the Steelers 4th down call from his own end, which is a ridiculous call. You know, Raider fans can never complain about the officials for a while because that the pass interference call they got on Zay Jones end of the first half is one of the worst calls you'll ever see.
It would have been illegal contact at least, though. If it wasn't pass interference, it was illegal contact.
And the official who was there, you know, watching, he never even sees where the ball is. He's totally watching the two guys and doesn't even notice the ball is like, you know, sailing out of the stadium. But anyway, they got some breaks. I just think it's it's just crazy. I mean, we want to talk about Derek Carr. Derek Carr didn't really play that well. Hasn't played that well the past month. But he's done enough things at the right moments where he's kind of got them these wins, along with Josh Jacobs, and the O-line played well last night. They were a big weakness at one point this season. So just a lot of resiliency around the whole team, and surprising and also very, very impressive.
On the penalty notes, like even though Derek Carr didn't play that well, it kind of reminded me, I think that was the Browns game where they kept drawing like the deep shot pass interference calls. Like that was kind of like their best offensive play until Josh Jacobs got going, because they weren't efficient throwing the ball. He wasn't completing passes very often or gaining yards. They really weren't running the ball well early on. And so when they came to, you know, outside of, you know, the couple turnovers that they forced or the Chargers, which were big, you know, when it came to moving the ball, it was really kind of all those defensive hold. I think the Chargers had 5 defensive holding penalties and the 2 pass interferences. And really that was, you know, what kept the offense going and kind of helped them put together the 29 points to jump out to that lead before, you know, the Chargers sending it in overtime.
It's so weird because, you know, Carr used to be Mr. like, you know, ball security, you know, game manager guy. I wouldn't take chance. I really complain about his check down tendencies. But now, last night, there were 2 or 3 throws off his back foot. Didn't care. Just like let it fly. It's just like, who is this guy? But it's working, and he definitely...
good things happen when you throw deep, man.
Apparently, he's learning a lesson, but it's just wild to see him last night, the throws he made versus what he would do, like, you know, 2-3 years ago. But, again, it's all about confidence, and obviously they have a lot right now as a team.
Yeah, I mean, you would think if you look at the box score, they had 35 points. They must have broke out offensively. They got Darren Waller back. 9 targets. Only has 2 catches for 22 yards on 9 targets. That would normally spell like, they probably didn't do very well. Hunter Renfrow targeted 5 times. He had 4 catches for 13 yards, which I'm sure he's very happy with. Obviously, they got the win. But I know for him, that 4-13, that's a big number for him because it's always been the combination of his quarterback and himself. It was Deshaun Watson, Clemson, now Derek Carr. I think he even got married on 4-13 or something. He gets the 2 touchdowns, but I mean, yeah, you mentioned Josh Jacobs, 132 yards, a career high, goes off in overtime. We'll get into the discussion later about what this does, you know, the big game against the Broncos, doing this here, you know, good start last week against Indy and what that means for his future. But it's just all about the present right now. And the Raiders, they go into that overtime, and we all kind of knew what the situation was. And I mean, everybody that talked about like the whole scenario of, you know, oh, just agree before the game, everyone take knees and we'll finish 0-0. That was never going to happen. And technically, I mean, there's a rule that, I mean, Roger Goodell could come down and from, you know, New York and just say, nah, that's not allowed. It's commissioner's authority. He's got a rule that he could have you know, basically probably ruled them both as losers. But if the game got to overtime, I think there was some realistic scenarios where the teams could, okay, like, we're not going to push to win. We don't, you know, we can accept a tie. And Rich Bisaccia admitted that, yeah, it was kind of in their minds when the Chargers didn't take timeouts after their, you know, on their second overtime drive. But a lot's been made of the Brandon Staley timeout that he did take, which I don't think it really changed much. He took the timeout with 5 seconds left on the play clock and I think, what, 38 seconds on the clock. No matter what, the Raiders are running that next play on 3rd and 4. He wanted to have his best run defense in there. They took off Kenneth Murray. They got in Justin Jones, who's their best run stuffer. They're one of the worst run stuffing teams in the league, and they couldn't stop the run. It's really as simple as that. It wasn't, you know, everyone wants to make it seem like that timeout is the reason the Raiders went for a field goal to win. I mean, they were in position for a 55-yard field goal already. I mean, maybe they think twice about that, worry about a block/return. But they probably still attempt that anyway. Here they got 10 yards and they made it. They were in position for a 57-yard field goal. So maybe they think twice about that. But still, they got 10 yards, make it a 47-yarder, and that timeout didn't really change anything.
Yeah, I think where it's coming from is Carr, not in the post game press conference, but coming off the field. He said that they changed their thinking or whatever. So that's probably what people took and ran with. But, like, I mean, it was very apparent that, like, after, you know, they did get the first down and get around midfield, they were playing for the tie. Like, I mean, you could just tell from, like, the body language of, like, running the ball. They weren't even, like, really running. They were running it, but it was, like, they were just running straight into the line of scrimmage, straight into the offensive lineman, basically. And, like, nobody was in a rush. Nobody was taking timeouts. Everybody was lethargic, standing around, running it down to the end. Like, there really was no other reason for them to do that, because even if they, let's say, make the field goal earlier, it's not like the Chargers would have got another try that the game would have been over. And so the only explanation for them, you know, behaving the way they were is like, okay, we're going to the playoffs either way. Like, if we win it, cool. But, like, if we don't, also cool, which is, like, I think it's probably the smart thing to do. Like, there's no need to, you know, start taking shots at the end zone and risk an interception or risk a sack fumble or, you know, whatever else may happen. But, I mean, once Jacobs, you know, broke that run, of course, they were just going to go, you know, win the game. But I think that was, you know, I guess technically it's conservative to just run it 3 times in that situation. But that was a smart thing to do, you know, just kind of, you know, give yourself a chance to get into better field goal position, but not have so much of a risk as passing the ball would still have. And so I just ended up breaking their way. But, I mean, at that point for Raiders fans, I mean, there really was no lose. It was like you get in the playoffs or you get in the playoffs. It's just a matter of who you were playing.
I don't think they were going for the tie. I think they were just like being safe with trying to get this field goal attempt. Yeah, they're just being safe. And
if they miss a field goal, they don't want any time left on the clock. They want
exactly.
I don't know, because it was a really, I mean, Dan Carlson has a leg, but I mean, they were like 60 yards out initially when they were kind of doing the lethargic thing. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll never know, but it just seemed kind of funky.
Well, there's some, I think Adam Hill, who works for the Review Journal, said he was watching. I guess he's a lip reader. He said that after the game, you can see Trent Sieg and Eckler talking. And Eckler asked him if they don't make that 3rd and 4, do they let the clock run down or let the clock run out? And the Sikhs apparently said yes. So I think that 3rd and 4 was definitely, and I see why Staley did it, because, I mean, if you told me a month ago that it was 3rd and 4 and the team put their, you know, they stacked the box against the Raiders, you know, and the Raiders would get, you know, 10 yards on 3rd and 4, I wouldn't have believed you. So obviously the offensive line's come a long way, and Jacobs has been running really well. So to me, at 3rd and 4, kind of that definitely was the key player. I get why you would try to stop the run there, but playing for the tie would have got you the Raiders a date in KC, which I don't think anybody wanted. So I think the field goal attempt probably was always in their back pocket.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
The other big thing was, the 2nd and 11 play, right? I mean, because he loses a yard on 1st down. If he gets stuffed for nothing on 2nd down, then I think at that point you probably do just, okay, you take the tie. But he gained 7 yards on 2nd down. So, you know, if you want to make it out to be like this 3rd down play that all of a sudden they went for it, tried to get the first, I mean, that 7-yard run on 2nd down was just as big, because that set up a 3rd and manageable for them. Then, you know, it went from a 64-yard field goal to a 57-yarder, and then you're like, okay, let's see if we can get a couple yards closer. Would they have attempted a 57-yard field goal? We don't know. Maybe not. The long ones, you do risk. You have to do the low trajectory. They could get blocked, but we'll never know.
Obviously, whatever happened, the more important thing was Jacobs, you know, performing the way he did late in that game, you know, especially with Derek Carr not having the best game. I mean, he, from the first field goal that they had, I mean, he missed Darren Waller for the game-winning touchdown. He was wide open, and really, it was just Jacobs kind of took over down the stretch for him. And I think I saw a stat, it was the Next Gen stat, said he, like, 130 of his yards came after contact or something insane like that. So while the offensive line did do a little bit better, it was still a situation where Josh Jacobs was making him right a little bit, you know, in the run game. And particularly since he was coming off an injury last week, and, you know, he hasn't had much success on the ground this year on a per carry basis, just from an efficiency standpoint, for him to kind of come up big for them in that moment. They're probably going to make the playoffs anyway in that scenario, but to avoid that Chiefs matchup and get a game against the Bengals, we'll get into later this week, that you know, is probably their first winnable playoff game since 2002, considering the 2016 game. They were pretty much cooked without Derek Carr. You know, as huge.
Oh, cooked. They had Connor Cook starting. That's a nice. There you go.
I think we got to give some credit to Greg Olsen, offensive coordinator, too. I don't agree with everything Greg Olsen does, and there's definitely some, you know, some things that raises some questions as them as a play caller. But I think, you know, as a play designer and the way he's able to create plays to complement other plays and using the Mariota package like he does, I think that he deserves some credit too. I mean, you know, things like last week when they put Zay Jones in motion and he gets a 3rd and he bounces back and he gets a 3rd and 1. And then after that, on the 4th and 1, they use that same motion and they get the touchdown to Hunter Renfrow against the Colts. They use that same formation and motion again on that 4th and 3 to Zay Jones. And this time they had him run a drag. So just like all compliments with each other. And I just like the way that they're really using the Mariota package now. And it's something that we've been, you know, talking about in this podcast forever, since like last year. So, you know, I think he does some good things. And the way that he's able to get the run game going, he deserves some credit. This offense, Derek Carr wasn't playing well, but there were wide open guys throughout this game.
I may ask Passaccia today, I'm curious, why do you think it is they always leave Derek on the field when Mariota comes out? It seems to me kind of dumb. Why wouldn't they get another player out there that actually can make a play at receiver if you want?
I don't think that's too uncommon with like the Wildcat type packages, but like I always wonder if there was some kind of rule or something where they had to have another quarterback, because it never really made sense to me.
He wants that 100% snap count, man. I mean, don't rule that out.
Yeah, because typically they would do it because if you're sending in a Wildcat running back as your quarterback, that, you know, like the Saints do it with Taysom Hill, because Taysom Hill is a tight end too. So when he's in a huddle, there's a threat that Drew Brees will just be the quarterback and he'll be tight end. But when Mariota's in, everybody knows, you know, he's going to be the quarterback. So there's no point in Derek Carr being on a field. You know, so I think they should take Carr off, and then you could have Mariota pass the ball like once in a while, and it could open things up. So I agree. Yeah, I don't think Carr needs to be on the field for the Mariota packages.
So actually, like, double checking the Snapchat, because I thought I remember seeing he did actually come off the field for five of those plays yesterday. So he only played 94% of the snap count, 75 of the 80 snaps. So,
but he was on the field with Mariota a few times.
Yeah, Mariota was on the field for 7 snaps. Carr missed 5 snaps. So looks like he was on the field for 2 snaps with Carr, but 5 he did come off. So, I mean, let's talk about the defense. We've praised that pass rush all season long, and we know Justin Herbert was out of this world on fourth down and all that, but I mean the reason he was out of this world on third and fourth down was because the Raiders were giving him hell all day. I mean, he had 30 incompletions. I mean, they were pressuring him. Max Crosby gets home with 2 sacks, which is nice because it boosts that end of the season sack total to 8, but everyone always says it that sack totals are not indicative of the impact a player has, and this season has proved that more than ever. I mean, we all know what Max Crosby's done. He was rightfully rewarded with a spot in the Pro Bowl. He had a favorable matchup going up against Storm Norton, the Chargers' right tackle, and he took advantage. And Herbert was constantly under pressure. Yeah, he made some plays, but he made some plays because the Raiders' pass rush was harassing him.
Crosby finished with 101 pressures, so he led the league in pressures, which is kind of interesting because in the beginning of his career, he had a very low pressure rate, but he had a double-digit sacks, and then now he switched around where he has a ton of pressures, but not quite the sack numbers to match it. But like Jimmy said, it kind of shows that pressures are, I think, the more important stat.
Yeah, I was going to say for the defensive line, not just the pass rush, but I think early on in the game, Austin Ekeler was giving them hell. And part of it was because the Chargers fell behind. They stopped running the ball as much. But I think the Raiders did play better against the run. I mean, on that 4th-and-2 that the Chargers went for from their own 18, they basically tried to run it up the middle. And I think it was Darius Fineline that made the stop there, him and Roderick Teamer, I believe. And for Fineline, he got carted off during the game, so I would imagine he's probably done. So that's a sizable loss. But the overall defensive line, with Fineline being out and Carl Nassib not playing in this game, I think they just, they flashed their depth, whether it was Clee Farrell coming in or Malcolm Kuntz getting some snaps, the rotation they have on the interior, both against the run and getting a pass rush. I think this was one of the more complete games that we saw from the defensive line. Whether the they had some coverage breakdowns, obviously that's how you get all those 3rd and 4th and 10s converted. But really, going into the fourth quarter, the defense had played so well, and it was largely because of the effort that the defensive line was doing. So big kudos to him. And obviously Rob Marinelli, I know he, after last year and kind of the defensive line falling flat, he had a lot of critics, but I think he showed, why they kept him around this year.
Well, they made some great pickups. We talked about it at the beginning of the season about the guys they picked up, especially on that front line. And last night, Fineline played really, really well. Quentin Jefferson, I thought, was in the backfield almost as much as Crosby was. Every time I looked up, Quentin was back there and someone in Herbert's face. And I thought, we mentioned Farrell. Farrell had a half a sack. It was a big, big time for that moment. And I just think you mentioned their depth and just they have this obviously, you could tell they're a close-knit bunch because they kind of play for each other. Definitely kind of a selfless bunch and just I look at the season, and it's definitely one of the key things to me is why they're here in the playoffs, is because of that D-line and the guys that picked up. It really played well.
Fallon would be a big loss if that injury ends up keeping him out the playoffs, because ever since he came back from his injury, he's been lights out, especially against the Broncos and in run defense. There will be some plays where he gets pushed around, but overall he's been way more disruptive when he's able to get in the knife in the backfield and get those TFLs. But he got 2 stops in a row on that 3rd down and 4th down series, too. So losing him will be big. But yeah, defensive line was just the pressure they were able to put on Herbert was pretty amazing to see all game.
Yeah, I think the cart had barely left the field and they had already ruled him out with a knee injury. So we typically know what that means. That I would imagine there'd be fear of an ACL there. And
I think he had a tweet saying he'll bounce back strong. So that also implies he's not back soon. I mean. More about the defense. I was going to say, just looking at the all the former Chargers, we wrote about them early on about these guys that Gus brought over. But I mean, we talk about Fylon and Perriman, but the guys in the secondary I thought played really well. I mean, Hayward had the interception. I thought Fasan and the team were also made some really big plays, some big hits, some big pass breakups. But I think the points total is misleading because they got so many points late and there's so many 4th down conversions. But overall, the secondary actually played better than the Chargers secondary, which I thought was going to be a key strength for them. So I was really impressed by Teamer and Faison last night.
Hayward had, you know, all these near interceptions. He finally got his interception in the last game.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Bisaccia. He held this team together. They are in the playoffs. Whether that means he's going to get, you know, he will get the full-time job, or whether he'll get a good shake at it, that'll be determined. I mean, I think right now, you know, focus on the playoffs, and, you know, that's where he'll be, that's where they'll be, that's where Mark Davis will be. I mean, Mark's going to be excited to actually go into a playoff game with his starting quarterback. Wanted to ask a question that one of our Twitter followers, Eric Galvin, has sent me this question a few times, wanting us to address it, and now's a good time to do it. Does Rich Bisaccia deserve consideration for NFL Coach of the Year?
Nah. I think it's Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel with the Titans, like, with all the injuries they had, to be the number one seed, and he coached the entire year is the other piece of that. I think it's Mike Vrabel. But no. Still a great job, though.
I don't know how the voting goes. I don't know if it's a ranked choice. I mean, if you get to the vote like 1 through 3, he probably deserves some third place votes. We all know it's like the voting for this stuff is so kind of based on the season long narrative that, you know, where they were 4 weeks ago, you know, we were firing him and all that, that it's hard to kind of catch up late.
I mean, you got the Eagles coach had a great year. That guy, no one, the rookie coach, no one kind of gave him a chance, and they definitely overcame some stuff and changed their whole philosophy. I think LaFleur in Green Bay, I mean, that was a mess with Rodgers, the way he came in, all the controversy, and then they've been incredible all year. So I think Rich did a really good job, but I think maybe part of the reason why he wouldn't be in the top 3 or 4 is because of the unique dynamic they have here. Like, he makes no pretense about it. He definitely defers in some aspects to Gus Bradley and to Greg Olsen as far as the play calling and the strategy, and he's kind of like the overseer, and I think it works really well because obviously there's no ego there. He doesn't really care that those guys get a lot of credit, and those guys don't care that he's the coach and they're just the coordinators, and they're kind of taking on a larger role. So like those three guys, their chemistry, their history together, the respect they have for each other definitely makes that work. It's a very unique situation, but I think that that's why the success they've had this year, the way they've come back from the John Gruden thing, I think it's because those three guys, how they work together, maybe more so than just Rich.
Maybe he deserves some consideration just because of the things that the Raiders gone through. I don't think he should win it. I think there's much more deserving candidates. But, you know, like Jimmy said, maybe a couple third-place votes. He does deserve some recognition for, you know, steering the Raiders into the playoffs after all the crazy things that's happened.
I think they said on the broadcast that the Raiders are the first team in 60 years to make a midseason coaching change and make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think he's like, I saw something where someone said he's the first interim coach to make the playoffs. It's true, but there's an asterisk because Bruce Arians did it with the Colts, but Pagano was sick. Kind of got the credit for those wins record-wise, so that's there's an asterisk, but normally he really is kind of, in a sense, the first interim guy to make this kind of leap. So he gets a lot of credit. The players obviously love him and play hard for him. And that's why when you win 6 games on the last play of the game, there's definitely a spirit there. And I think that comes from him a lot. Definitely there's a lot of confidence that he has in the players and kind of and don't get too high or too low. Just kind of, you know, ride with the flow and keep pushing. So definitely, I mean, I think he's shown why he wants to be the coach next year. The players, I think, have his back. So, I mean, I know I saw some social media videos last night of Mark Davis in the locker room. Everyone's celebrating and dancing, and he's having a good time. So I know Mark knows how much the players like Rich. So that'll be a big factor as far as what he does going forward.
Yeah, and I think the matchup they drew kind of will shape the conversation this week, too. Because I think if they would have, let's say they did tie and they were going to Arrowhead to play the Chiefs, I mean, probably know what's happening there, so we more so put the focus on, you know, what maybe what the coaching situation is going to be. But like, they can beat the Bengals. Like, I know they lost by, you know, what, 20 points the first time around he played, but that was a close game early on in the fourth quarter, a 1-score game, 3-point game, I believe. So there's a legitimate chance they could advance in the playoffs right now. So it's kind of hard to, I don't even think as a fan you should be really concerned about, you know, is Bisaccia getting a job or not, because the team can actually, you know, put something together in the playoffs now because of this matchup that they drew.
I mean, in hell, just psychologically, I mean, if you've gotten creamed by the Chiefs twice already, I mean, if you go to Cincinnati and Joe Burrow plays lights out like he's been playing and he beats you, you know, hey, you still say, hey, man, it was a hell of a season for us getting to the playoffs. If you go to KC and get creamed for a third time against the Chiefs, just psychologically, in terms of the Chiefs are the team that they are measured against as the division opponent, that would be tough to take. So, I mean, I think the fact that they're facing the Bengals, they got the 5 seed, a 10-win season. I mean, you got to give kudos all around. I mean, it's impressive that they have made it this far. I mean, we wrote them out several times, and yet here they are. They're in the playoffs, and I mean, happy for Raider fans. You know, I mean, the environment there, you know, at Allegiant Stadium on Sunday night. I mean, this is what the Raiders dreamed of when they moved to Vegas, got their shiny stadium to be able to have it full of Raider fans and, you know, going loud, going crazy and being able to celebrate a huge win that sends them to the playoffs. For the first season with fans to be able to mark that with a playoff berth, that's pretty impressive. All right, guys, and that'll wrap up this post-game edition of State of the Nation. We will be back, of course, later in the week to get you ready for the Raiders taking on the Bengals in the playoffs. We've got an 18th game. Podcast isn't going anywhere. We've got another week here, and we'll see if the Raiders can keep this run going and see if they can go to Cincy and beat the Bengals.
Apparently, I promised to sing, but it is
really... Oh! We yeah. forgot about it, but Vic did
people,
remind us.
That on social media didn't forget about it, but... I am going to say
I got some suggestions here. Do you want me to read the list of suggested songs that
Yeah, please.
Okay,
please,
so let's see. We've got somebody would like Danny Boy.
Danny Boy.
Raider Colors by Too Short and Ice Cube. I believe I can fly.
No.
Blow the whistle.
No. We can't do I Can Believe I Can Fly.
Why Danny Boy?
It's his calling to keep hitting it between the pipes is what this guy says. Isn't that a bad one? Staying Alive. Staying Alive.
High notes in that one. I got a lot of beatbox.
Wilson Phillips, Hold On.
Ooh, Wilson Phillips, Hold On.
Johnny would like Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
All right. Well, definitely I'll work on something for next show. I haven't had any coffee yet. It's early. I don't know why I made these stupid promises, but I guess it shows you I had no faith. I definitely didn't think they'd win. So we need the last 4 weeks. So I'm definitely going to pay for myself being a hater. But all right, I'll take those suggestions under advisement, and I'll try and do something not too horrible on Thursday.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later this week.
Adios.
Later.
Playoff week. Woo! What the world needs now is love, sweet love.